and welcome to episode 11 of Divergent by Design, a podcast that is dedicated to exploring the ways that you can use universal design for learning in your classroom. My name is Jonathan Wiley, and I'm joined today by your friend and mine, the amazing Lynn Kleinmeier.
Woohoo! I'm glad that you added a little to that because it was looking a little lackluster. So I was going to give you a terrible time about your intro, but you exceeded my expectations, my friend.
I threw a little spice on it. What can I say?
I know. Spicing it up, kicking it up a notch.
So where are we today?
All right. So today we are back in that action and expression column of the UDL guidelines. And today we are specifically focusing on the final component, which is really all about executive functions.
Yeah, we had the name of the episode today. I think that's something that everybody can identify with, that information inundation, because we are just constantly swamped by things, especially in this digital age that we live in, that we're always taking things in through our eyeballs, through our ears, and the idea of having to process all that and deal with that is a lot for adults, but I would say doubly so for kids.
Right, exactly. And so hopefully in today's episode, as we explore this whole idea of what executive functions are, first and foremost, but then also kind of some strategies and some tools and resources to help facilitate building your capacity as an adult, but also then transferring those same skills to students. Hopefully you'll walk away with some amazing ideas.
I'm sure they will. So,
well, I mean, one would hope.
Yeah. Let's start with that definition then that you alluded to.
Yes. So I feel like it's a reoccurring theme in every episode that I have a Lynn's true confession time. So today's true confession. When I first started looking at the UDL guidelines and digging in and exploring, I'll be honest, I didn't really understand the difference between this component of executive functioning and that component in the engagement column, which is all about self-regulation. I like really didn't quite understand the difference between the two. Was it just me?
No, not at all.
Good. That makes me feel better. Thank you for affirming me. So I did a little bit of exploration trying to build my own understanding. And I'll be honest, there are still times where I struggle just a little bit, kind of looking at, okay, what is the difference? But here's ultimately what I've arrived at. Really, it's this idea that all of these executive functioning skills are necessary for students to get to that self-regulation. Mm-hmm. So self-regulation being that ability to stop and think and manage your choices. All of these functioning skills of executive functioning lay that foundation for us to be able to practice that metacognition and self-regulation. And so it's this perfect moment of the UDL guidelines. We've talked about them being very cyclical and that they're deeply interconnected and interrelated. And I think this is a perfect moment of here's how it all circles back and relates.
So it's kind of like bringing order to the chaos.
Yes.
So that you can have that mental space to process what is going on. Because if you don't bring order to the chaos, then just things get out of control and you lose that self-control, that self-regulation.
Exactly. I love that, bringing order to the chaos, because I feel like that's what I need in order to manage that information inundation. Like, you got to have those strategies. So I kept alluding to these executive functioning skills. Mm-hmm. And so that definition I gave is like, yeah, Lynn, that's real great, but you still haven't defined what executive functioning really is. And so kind of through my research and my exploration and my reading, kind of discovered that executive functioning really has three fundamental areas. So the first being your working memory, which is really that ability to keep information in your mind and use it in some sort of way. You've got cognitive flexibility, the ability to think about something in more than one way. And then the last component is inhibitory control. Other people might say it a little bit easier as self-control. So that ability to ignore distractions and resist temptations, maybe one I need to work on just a little bit.
If I had to put you on the spot there, which one of those do you think you have the most challenges with in your life?
Inhibitory control, 100%. Yeah. Ignoring distractions and resisting temptation. I mean, like, I feel there's so many moments in my life where I can't quiet my mind. And I'm like, squirrel! I just, ooh.
I know. I think even just to this morning where we scheduled time to work on this podcast, I think we were scheduled to start at 8:30. But by the time we worked through all our distractions and temptations, it's been closer to 10 o'clock before we actually hit record. So yeah.
I think our morning started with, I'm going to derail the conversation we're not even having yet. And it just escalated from there.
I mean, they were all important conversations. They were all work-related conversations. And some of them were related to the podcast, but not directly to what we're talking about right now, other than the fact that we got off track and we were distracted. So,
yeah. But self-control. I mean, it's processing, right? You know, and that's part of when you think about these skills of executive functioning, like, it was great to break it down into those three parts, but I still needed it a little bit further defined for me. So really, when we're talking about executive functioning skills, mm-hmm. those skills that students need to practice, things like paying attention and focusing on the things that are maybe important towards reaching your goals. So maybe I need to practice that a little bit more. But it's also things like adaptable thinking, planning, time management, organization, task completion, and once again, that whole idea of self-monitoring all the way through, like practicing that true metacognition. So when we think about your executive functioning skills, you know, circling back to the question that you just asked, I feel like I'm real good at organization and planning and task completion. Like, there's nothing like checking off those boxes.
Yeah, be productive.
Mm-hmm. I do. I love productivity. Because it makes me feel like I have some sort of semblance of control over the chaos. But there's other parts that I really need to work on. Paying attention, adaptable thinking. My husband would say that that's something I maybe need to work on, the flexible thinking kinds of ideas.
Yeah.
How about you?
I think most husband and wives have had those conversations over the years about thinking about things from more than one perspective or more than one option for doing something. But yeah, I would definitely say we've had those conversations at home too.
Right. Well, and speaking of, you know, I mean, we're all works in progress. And as you and I were talking about this, once again, being super transparent to you as listeners, we are works in progress, not only as professionals, as humans, but also as parents. Because when we started exploring this executive functioning conversation, I think I looked at Jonathan and I was like, I feel like this is a real big mom fail moment for me. It was a recognition that there were some things that I maybe need to work on.
I think there's the idea of being a perfect parent is one that you have to let go of pretty quickly when you become a parent.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know who we're really comparing ourselves to, if it's some idyllic TV show from the 60s or something where the kids are very polite and all the rest. But yeah, it is a constant struggle. And I know that, you know, you and I have had conversations about harassing or haranguing our own children over deadlines that they don't really seem to take with a whole lot of sincerity sometimes, or they don't put it very high in their hierarchy of what's important in their life. And so I don't know. It's a constant struggle. And I think that teachers are probably going to find some of the same things in their classroom. And hopefully we can give some solutions for that today.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I think about as both a parent and as a teacher, recognizing that, like, when it came to my executive functioning practices right now and in the classroom, the pendulum would kind of swing from the micromanaging and controlling every little aspect mm-hmm. to like almost neglect. Like, I'm just going to feed you to the wolves. And so, you know, that assumption that like kids are magically going to pick this up. And so here's the thing, friends. Kids aren't born with these skills, but they can learn it. So hopefully.
Yeah.
We're going to give you some ideas of how you can directly and explicitly share and address some of these ideas.
All right, so let's dig in and see what that's about. I mean, we talk the talk. Can we walk the walk?
I think this is where we're going. I'm going to attempt as I wiggle in my seat.
Starting off with goal setting and setting goals and working towards goals. Those are things that come up in a couple of different places in the UDL guidelines. I think we mentioned those when we were in the engagement column earlier on, and we are revisiting the idea of goals and what good goals look like.
Right. And, you know, this is one of those moments where I love that it is cyclical, that you're constantly revisiting these things. But in this particular lens, you know, I really think about that backwards design kind of idea of like, yeah, okay, you're having this goal, which sounds great. Okay, now let's break it down. What are those micro steps that you need to take in order to get to that main goal? So like, there's nothing more satisfying to me, honestly, than writing down a goal and then like breaking it down into sub steps. Like, I'm kind of a nerd, but it just satisfies that need of crossing things off and feeling like I'm being productive. But really, when I think about it, it's helping me ensure that I'm being successful and kind of helping kids build that strategy of thinking about, okay, so if this is your goal, what are the steps? What are the processes that you need to take to actually get to that?
Yeah, in the productivity world, I think I follow a system called Getting Things Done, and they make a distinction between an action and a project. And that's similar to what a goal. So, I mean, sometimes people put things on their calendar like, I don't know, plan the field trip. All right. That's not something you could just check off your list and say, right, that's done. Plan the field trip is a project, and there's steps along the way that you need to do and things that have to be done in a certain order. And you need to break things down into manageable steps. And I think that's what we're talking about here.
Exactly. Exactly. So thinking about that, not only for yourself, but also that modeling and scaffolding this kind of idea for your students, thinking about some tools or strategies, I really love when things like converge and come together. And so when you think about some of those blended learning approaches, like using HyperDocs or playlists, we've talked about those previously in the podcast, but this is another perfect example of how they can be used to help kids kind of figure out where they're going and how they're going to get there. And so it's a perfect example of how you can do some of that backwards design and help them monitor their progress, but also maybe have some celebrations along the way. What are some other things that you would reference, Jonathan?
Yeah, and I think with HyperDocs and playlists, one of the nice things about that is it can bring, we talked about bringing order to the chaos, maybe that's that's our theme for the podcast here. It can bring a little bit more order because you as a student can see how far along the journey you are. You've got that visible checklist of things ahead of you that you know that you've still got to work on, and presumably you are working towards some kind of deadline or something on there. So they're great for that. And if you've never looked at things like that before, we can put some links in the show notes for you to explore.
Yeah, exactly. And those are a great entry point for students, but they are still a little bit maybe more teacher-driven.
Yes.
So thinking about that gradual release, then taking it to that next level of showing kids things like Google Keep or even Tasks, if you're a Google user in your educational environment, but showing students how they can kind of set the goal and then break into subtasks. And with both Keep and Tasks, I'll be honest, one of the things I love to do is to reorganize things so that they're in chronological order. Like, I think about, okay, so I'm going to break it down, like you were talking about, like the planning the field trip kind of thing. Well, what are those sub-steps? Well, I got to call the place. I got to get the bus. I got to do this. I got to create the permission slip. But sometimes there's a chronological order to that, that it's like this domino effect. And so being able to rearrange those and helping kids see that they can, within Google Keep, within Tasks, they can reorder those subtasks so they have this understanding of the chronological order that they need to go through, that there's kind of that process. And it allows them to own all of it.
Keep and Tasks are great places to get started with this. I mean, I think even from early on in elementary, they start to introduce kids to the idea of, you know, a calendar or some kind of scheduler. My kids used had some kind of planner that we would fill in at the end of the day where we talked about the things that we did in class. But I think as they go towards, you know, middle school and high school, you got to start to think about, you know, planning ahead a little bit. And if you're using maybe an LMS where you're putting assignments in with due dates and things like that, or Google Classroom with due dates and things like that, that can transfer back to a calendar that students can reference and see, okay, I've got another 2 weeks, I've got another 3 days, or whatever it is to work on something.
Yeah.
And plan their work accordingly.
Exactly. So, you know, you think about that idea of the planning and the organization. So let's kind of transition to, we've talked a lot about the organization of the process, but what about the information, the resources, the materials that we need to work our way towards completing that goal? So kind of helping manage the information inundation side of things, which, P.S., I love that title, information inundation. It makes my heart happy.
It's the alliteration strikes back.
So, you know, I think so much right now about what we know about cognitive load and just how overwhelmed we can get. You know, the idea of your working memory holds on to things for this like finite little amount of time. And especially when we have so many things demanding our attention, thinking about how we can help scaffold or support our students to give them the cognitive space to really focus on the important bits of information. So kind of thinking about strategies and how do you manage your information inundation, Jonathan?
So information I deal with in different ways, I think, depending on what it is. But one of the apps I like to use a lot is Workflowy. And I use that because I tell people it works the way that my brain works, which is kind of like in...
Tell me more.
Kind of like in bullet points where I'm taking notes on things, like if I go to a conference or I'm at a professional development or I'm planning a professional development or I'm thinking about writing a blog post or I'm looking at our show notes here for the podcast, and it's just a myriad of bullet points, okay? Mm-hmm. And sub-bullets and even more bullets and nested bullets. So that's what Workflowy is all about on there. For my brain, because it's a free app that just lets you work in bullets, and your bullets can be endlessly nested inside of each other. So outlining apps could be good for students, but there's other, you know, note-taking apps that people might want to experiment with too. Google Keep is technically a note-taking app, I guess, isn't it?
It's a digital curation tool.
Yeah, and it is.
Yeah, you know, when I think about that information inundation kind of idea of, I like things to be in a one-stop shop. So I really appreciate when everything is collected together. Like, I'm super appreciative when there's like running notes or running docs for meetings. I love that because it puts it all in one spot. You can go back and reference. You're not having to, I think of myself, and when I use like post-it notes in the physical form, I'm always like, where did I put that? But in a digital form, I mean, that's the kind of the advantage, is that some of these digital curation tools allow you to put everything in that one-stop shop. So I think about, you mentioned Keep, which I love that you can add the different labels and you can curate and collect things. That makes me happy. Even just using, like I said, a running Google Doc can be really great. And just having that singular spot to go and find things.
Yeah. I like one-stop shops, but at the same time, I like to try and make sure that the tool I'm using is being used for the thing it was designed to be used for, if that makes sense. So although I will use Workflowy to, you know, plan out and outline stuff, I'll use something like Digo for saving links and bookmarking things and things like that. I don't keep all that inside of Workflowy. I probably could, but I think it would be too much for my brain to process. So I do a little bit of compartmentalizing for some of those things too.
Right. Well, you bring up a really good point, too, about, like, having organization to your one-stop shop, you know, that you know, I mentioned labels and keep, or when I do my Google Notes kind of stuff, I use the different titles so that I can, you know, you think about the those pieces that are already built into the hierarchy of how Google Docs can be utilized so that I can fast forward and find things quickly. And I try to like not just have a major like brain dump of all of the things of like here's random links and stuff. Like I try to kind of keep it somewhat organized, which I think is a really important piece to highlight and to surface and to share, especially with your students, that having a curation tool is great. But just because you've curated every place, you still need to make it usable and manageable and purposeful.
Yes, you need an efficient way to recall that information back into your working memory when you need it.
So I do feel like we're turning this into a little bit of a productivity podcast. But, I mean, obviously, that's a fundamental piece of executive functioning. However, when you're looking at the component of executive functioning in the UDL guidelines, is they really hone in on feedback. And I think this is a really, really, really important piece of the puzzle, that remembering we're scaffolding and supporting our students. So we want to be able to support them as they navigate their way through not only the process, but also the content and circling back to those goals. So really thinking about how important your role as an educator is in providing some really, really purposeful feedback to keep kids on track and feeling like they have some semblance of control over the chaos. Because ultimately, our goal is to have our students be expert learners that really own their own learning process, but they need our help.
Yeah. So when we're thinking about feedback, you often hear that mantra of feedback needing to be timely and specific and actionable. And I'm going to reference again that book that Lynn and I have been reading by Catelyn Tucker and Katie Novak. And they called out some research recently on feedback and said that when feedback is in an audio or visual format, it's sometimes more impactful for students and they're more likely to pay attention to it because, you know, we've talked about this in the past, I think, that sometimes when we spend all that time writing the feedback down for students and they don't look at it and it's like, well, why did I waste my time on this? And how are they going to benefit from this feedback and things like that? That maybe we can experiment with maybe some digital tools like Moat or Screencastify or something like that to give that audio or visual feedback and experiment a little bit. See what impact that has if you are giving some feedback that way.
Right. Well, I mean, think about it's UDL in action, right?
Yeah.
That written feedback works for some kids, but for some it doesn't. And so being able to think about the multiple modalities and multiple pathways and multiple means, it's just another really great way to resurface that. You know, in that same book, Katie and Catelyn talk about approaching feedback like a coach. And I love that concept because when we think about when feedback is really valuable, especially when it's part of the process, you know, it's during the learning as opposed to after the learning.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, both have value, but really impactful feedback can be when you said it's actionable. And when can you take action on things? While you're still in the trenches, while you're still in the process. But they actually in the book had some really, really great questioning stems for you or some things to think about. And they talk about that purposeful, you know, before kind of feedback, the during feedback and the after feedback. But they have some great questions that I really want to share here just because I think they're really, really valuable. So kind of as kids are going through the process, asking them, where are you going and what are you working toward? So helping them actually establish the goals. So it's circling back to kind of that engagement category. But then talking about this breaking things down and into the sub-skills. How are you going to get there? And what actions or behavior will help you make progress towards those goals? And then the final set of questions is, how will you know when you have arrived? And what will success look or feel like? And I love those because it really empowers kids to own that learning process, to do the celebration as they're making progress towards whatever that goal is. So I absolutely love those.
Yeah, and when you're thinking about that idea of self-reflection or self-assessment on the student side, they'd be great things to have as a little checklist or a little cheat sheet or something. Okay, so let's pause for a minute. Am I still working towards the same goal? Or do I remember what the goal is?
Am I going
in the right direction? Am I still following the steps I thought I'd be following? And yes, is my end product going to, what's success going to look like? I think that's a great thing to remember.
Yeah. And kind of retroactively thinking to themselves, okay, what would I do differently? Which is ultimately working kids towards that whole idea of self-regulation. They're practicing this metacognition, thinking about their thinking, and it completes the circle. And we're back at the beginning. I love it.
But we're not done yet.
No!
Because it would be remiss of us not to throw out an episode challenge. And we have a good one as we cycle back a little bit to our productivity podcast episode.
Yes. All right. So because we are all works in progress and because I do love my productivity, we have for you a productivity little quiz. So in the show notes, if you navigate your way to Todoist.com, there's a quiz that you can take, which I absolutely love because you can take it for yourself or maybe even through the lens of a student or your child. And what that quiz does is it asks you a series of questions, and then at the end, it generates a tip that's going to help scaffold your executive functioning skills. Now, if you don't feel like taking a quiz, you can actually explore the different ideas and strategies listed on the page. If you kind of scroll down just a little bit, if you already have some ideas of maybe some places that you want to hone your skills or kind of work. So it's really kind of nice. You can use it either way. If you're like, what could make me a little bit more productive? You can take a quiz. Or if you just want to explore on your own, you have at it.
Yeah, there's lots of approaches you can take to productivity, and what works for one person doesn't work for another. So that's honoring that UDL ethos there that we all work in different ways and we have different preferences. So this might help you discover some for you and or for your students.
Love it. All right. So as always, we hope that this particular challenge and the episode itself have provided you with some grounding and is going to help you keep growing. Our music for the podcast is What's the Angle by Shane Ivers of SilvermanSound.com and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.